Have you ever thought about that while you're away, your home could be an Airbnb? I did. I actually bought two homes in Albuquerque that I Airbnb'd, and it was just an amazing investment, honestly, because, you know, as you are accruing value in your property, you are also making money on the Airbnbs. It's amazing. So your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
21 Seeds infused tequila is a must-have. It's an award-winning tequila. It's infused with real juice, with real fruit, which means the flavors are built in. It's real. So you need like two or three ingredients to make your perfect cocktail. Hey, you know how I'm always trying to keep my house parties exciting? New cocktails? Do you?
Yeah.
Okay, well, here's something that's going to flip the script.
Okay.
All right, 21 Seeds infused tequila.
Yeah. Tell me more about this, right? Oliver Hudson.
Yeah, 21 Seeds is an award-winning tequila that's infused with juice from real fruits. You only need two to three ingredients to make the perfect cocktail.
Wait a minute. I think I know what brand you're talking about. You know why?
Yeah.
Because 21 Seeds is founded by two sisters and their friend. It's female founded.
That's right.
See?
Sounds
See
like
how I know? Something I can get behind.
I know. Well, there's a good story behind that for sure. Listen, if you love tequila, you have to try 21 Seeds infused tequila. Enjoy responsibly. 21 Seeds, Diageo, New York, New York.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Hi, I'm Kate Hudson.
And my name is Oliver Hudson.
We wanted to do something that highlighted our relationship.
And what it's like to be siblings.
We are a sibling revelry.
No, no.
Sibling revelry.
Don't do that with your mouth.
Sibling revelry.
That's good.
Hello and welcome.
Oliver!
Kidding!
I can't believe it's our first back.
First epi back.
At it for long. It's been a while. We've been done this for a while.
I know. And the people have been clamoring. And so we just said, you know what? We got to come back on to save the world.
We have to save the world one sibling relationship at a time.
Exactly. Starting off with Jenna and Barbara Bush.
Yes, which I loved. I really didn't know what to expect. I mean, I've been interviewed by Jenna. Have you been interviewed by Jenna before?
No, I haven't.
And she's great. Always has such great energy, and I always love seeing her. And Barbara, has been at the house. We've had like a night together. We hung out.
So they're fraternal twins, and they're our first siblings who have ever lived in the White House. So who else do we need to get that lived in the White House?
Well, we should get the Obamas. We need Sasha and Malia.
We need Sasha and Malia.
And what would actually be a really crazy podcast, which I think would be really interesting, would be Jeb and President Bush.
Oh, yeah.
But maybe they have to do it.
I don't know. Maybe after they found out that Jenna and Barbara did it, maybe they're like, oh, well, we want to be cool too.
Jenna's the co-host of NBC Today's with Hoda and Jenna, and she's the founder of the Today Book Club, Read with Jenna. And
we need a book club, by the way. We've been talking about this.
Book club? I would love. Yeah,
we should do a family book club. That would be hysterical.
I would enjoy that.
Yeah. So then Barbara is the co-founder and the board chair of Global Health Corp. You know, and she's also vice president of the social impact for the MBA. They just do so many amazing things.
Yeah, and they're really fun. They're so super easygoing, very personable, and they wrote
this children's book. This is what they didn't come on for their health. You know what I mean? They came on our podcast. Of course, they love the Hudsons, but they actually wrote a children's book.
It's their newest one
called Love Comes First, and it's on bookshelves November 7th, 2023.
So it's coming. Anyway, we talked about everything. We talked a lot about their rebellious years, ghost stories in the White House, the influence of their parents and grandparents, much more. So enjoy this episode. Hello,
little siblings.
Hi.
How are y'all?
How are you?
I'm good.
I'm glad we figured this out. This is so fun. Oh, let me get the book. Hold on one second. First of all, why don't you guys sort of introduce yourself and talk about Jenna? I mean, we've, you know, you've interviewed me a couple times. Have you been interviewed by Jenna and Hoda? Have
you?
You need to come on our show.
I know.
You haven't.
You're not feeling me, and that's fine.
you need to be invited on the show.
Yeah.
So invite him.
Yeah,
you're invited.
It's. I didn't want to bring it up, but it's bullshit. We'll talk about it later.
But let's just start with where we are now and you guys in your life and like what you're, you know, what you're up to. And then we'll go back and delve into that childhood.
Well, so yes, I got to interview you. I've also had the opportunity to talk with your loveliest mom, which is always one of Hoda and my favorite guests, or she is. She's like just light.
She's the best.
And so... I work every day on television, which is hilarious and something I never thought I would do. I thought I was going to teach, and I did teach in inner city DC and West Baltimore for the first several years of my career. And then I made this pivot, and it's really fun because I'm curious and I'm interested in the way that people live and are and what lights them up. And I get to sit next to like a joyful, a true joyful human.
She's so great.
She's awesome.
What made you want to even attempt doing this?
Yeah. Well, I did not want to. And I turned the job down for the first several years.
Oh,
I
was okay.
That's just nothing I would ever want to do. And I was on the show for a book that I wrote, which is why they said, oh, you'd be really good at this. Would you ever do this? And I was like, no, I never would. And so I continued to teach. But honestly, teaching, and particularly in our country's marginalized areas, is hard. Really hard. And I was working insane hours. I dreamed of my students. I was stressed, like a lot of our teachers in our country. And my husband was like, maybe you should go take that meeting. You know, it can be a different sort of way of teaching, a different way of telling stories. And so I did.
Did you say you dream about your students?
Well, I dreamed about my students.
Right.
Like it was
all consuming.
All consuming.
Yeah.
It was making, you know, and they actually, when I had the interview at the Today Show, they were like, what do you like about the show? And I was like, oh, I've never seen it. I'm at school.
Yeah. I'm usually driving to school.
Yeah, exactly. But so I think, you know, for the first year, I was a reading specialist, and I commuted from Baltimore, where I lived, to New York, and I worked doing both. But at some point, I made the decision to be all in, and I'm so glad I did.
Right.
That's so great. And Barbara, what about you? What are you up to these days?
So I work in global health. I've worked in global health pretty much my whole career. I started and ran an organization called Global Health Corps for 10 years, and now I work for a philanthropist. And it's been a busy 2 years given COVID and everything that's been going on in the world. So it's been fun to feel like I'm not sitting on the sidelines of that. And I had a baby, so I'm figuring that all out at the same time. It's a lot of fun.
My God, that is so well. So where did you guys grow up?
We grew up in Texas. We grew up in Austin for middle school and high school. So I feel like we think Austin is home, really.
We were born in West Texas, which is like, I don't know if any of you have been to West Texas, but like if I'm in a room with New Yorkers, nobody has ever been to where we're from, which is a really small town called Midland. And West Texas is like the desert. If y'all been to Marfa, it's very similar to that.
Yeah.
And so we lived near our mom's parents, who I'm named after, Jenna Welch, and our grandpa Harold, who passed away when we were 13. But they were desert people. He was a home builder, and she never graduated from college, but she was like a lifelong
naturalist and learner. She taught us all the constellations in the sky. She had a rock collection that Barbara and I would like go look at, and she would teach us about the rocks and how they were made. And she took community college classes till she was too old to drive, till she like got into a car accident, and we were like, can't drive anymore. So they really kind of informed so much of our early childhood.
Mm-hmm.
How cool.
Friday Night Lights? Was that West Texas? Yeah. That's Dylan, right?
Totally.
Yes.
I never got into Friday Night Lights.
Oh, it's so good.
But so good. Watch it now.
It's incredible. I just rewatched it and it's amazing. Yeah.
I'm trying to think of how old you guys are. Were you born when your grandpa was president?
Yes. We were born, he was vice president. And so that was sort of like what we entered the world with on that side of our family. And we were super close with them and would visit them in DC all the time. But our day-to-day was much more informed by my mom's parents, Harold and Jenna.
Okay.
And what did Harold do?
He was in construction. He was a home builder. And in fact, he built the home that my mom grew up in and that my grandmother lived in until she had to move to a retirement community in her late 80s, early 90s.
So that was more of your life then, was that side of things where grandpa was vice president. It was like, vice what? Like, or was that a...
Close to him, you know? So it wasn't like we could go over every weekend. But when we were with him, you know, we loved him and they were super present. But yeah, our life was much sort of smaller in scale than I think people probably assume.
Mm-hmm.
For how long?
Really, I think until my dad became president.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, until we were eight. Our dad became president when we were 18. And
oh,
I feel
my
like it.
God. Did you hate
that?
I mean, did you hate that? I mean, was it just like, oh, Jesus Christ, are you fucking kidding me right now? Like, I'm 18 years old. Like, is this really happening?
Well, you guys weren't in the White House, though, right?
They were in college, right?
Yeah, we're in college.
Yeah, but still, Secret Service. Yeah. All of a sudden, you're like, you can't go to a party. Da, da, da. Like, thanks, Dad. Thank you.
He didn't respond well when he told us he was running for president.
Oh, really?
Really?
We were 16. which was probably even slightly more temperamental time than
yeah.
And we'll never forget crying. Yeah, do you remember where we were, Barbara?
No, do you? I remember crying.
We were outside, like took us outside to sit on this bench to be like, I think he thought like maybe the outdoor nature of it would calm us down. But we both cried in unison.
Mm-hmm.
Burst into tears at the same time.
We told him he was going to lose.
He was going to ruin our life, which we've since apologized.
And we said we were sorry. But we were like, how could you do this to us?
Oh, my God. It makes sense, though. Like, 16-year-old girls, I mean, and then your dad decides to run for president, which is like, I mean, talk about being in the craziest spotlight. I mean, that is, it's just talk about a difficult thing at that age.
Oh,
I couldn't imagine.
How did your dad respond when you're like, fuck you, Dad, you ruined my life? And was he just like, all right, girls, like, relax?
He was really calm. I mean, I don't understand
about it.
He was calm about it. Like, he didn't react. He wasn't very reactive with us, which I think was a good way to be with the way our personalities were.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, twins, it's like two on one all the time. So it's better. It was better to be calm with us.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, let's go back a little bit. You're twins.
We're twins.
You're fraternal twins. And we've been lucky enough to interview a couple of twins. Now, we actually interviewed an expert in twins, which was really interesting.
Yeah, it was cool.
But let's go back to like your first memories. Like, do you guys have very vivid, specific first memories as kids?
Well, I mean, my first memories definitely, and this is the thing about being a twin, is that my whole world, like everything that I am is because of Barbara. Like, she was the one that taught me what love looked like. We were the same exact age. So therefore, like, none of us had different perspectives on things. Like, we had a very shared history and a shared perspective on the history. So definitely, I just remember, like, at my form of love at that age, which could still be lingering, very aggressive. Like, I just wanted to, like, wheeze Barbara. I loved her so much. I just wanted to, like, eat her, mm-hmm. hold her so tight. And she, her love is slightly more gentle. I remember smothering you.
I do remember you smothering me. Those are some of my first memories, but you were smothering me with love. But I have no childhood memories that don't have Jenna in them. And like the ones that I remember from when we were the youngest, or when if Jenna was hurt or something, like being worried for my sister, or like us like exploring together. Because the best thing about a twin is you have a playmate at all times, and you would have no scary first moments as a twin. Like if the first day of school, you have a partner to mm-hmm. do it with. Or when Jenna broke her jaw when we were in pre-K. And I remember like being with her at school during that. Like it was so amazing that you have someone by your side in all these moments. And for us, it meant that we had someone to have a huge imagination with, and it made everything fun. Mm.
Oh, that's so great.
I'm jealous. It sounds great.
That sounds so wonderful. I feel like it's true. Like when you, because I mean, a lot of times when you're young and you're growing up, like you really do find yourself using your imagination on your own in your room with your alone time. You find that that's when, you know, when you have your own kids, you watch them have those moments, which I think are really important. But to have someone to be able to do that with all the time.
Yeah.
Were you inseparable, best. Like actually inseparable? Or did you have your own ideas and your own desires to be without each other and be independent? Because there is a codependency that can exist that can maybe be unhealthy.
Yeah, we weren't codependent, I don't think. Do you? Or was I codependent on you and you weren't on me?
I think you were a little more codependent. But we liked different. I mean, we had fun doing all the same stuff, but we, like, Jenna was a, it's not surprising to me that Jenna's on the Today Show. She was a performer since she was little. She like loved to sing. She wanted to be an actress. She was constantly performing. And I feel like I was her audience in a healthy way. And we liked different things, which was really sweet of my parents to indulge us having, at the same age, having different interests. Therefore, we could be, like, I don't think our identity was ever confusing to us the way that I think it can be with some twins.
Mm-hmm. And also, we look, you know, I feel like there's a big difference between identical and fraternal. We look so different that nobody, you know, the only thing they would say is like, and even now, like people will be like, oh, the Bush twins. And for some reason, Barbara and I find that like slightly, like it gives us like, we're like, oof, can you just call us our names? Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah.
We're 40. And Barbara gets mad when I say we're in our 40s because she's like, no, we're just 40. 40.
You know what's weird? I know this sounds crazy. I didn't even know you guys were twins. Does that mean I'm so not?
No.
Yeah. I thought you guys were more like Irish twins. I thought one was a little bit older.
People say that all the, like, we get it one way or the other. But a lot of people are like, you have a twin? You know, like people have forgotten, which is also great. But mm-hmm. the one that's interesting, and I don't know if your twin expert said this, but about being a twin is that for whatever reason, people feel like even now that we're the inverse of each other. So Barbara came and like hosted, actually your Kate, your friends who were so
Sarah.
Cute.
Sarah and Aaron.
They were on. But that day that she was hosting, Davey, who works with me, who I love, was like, oh, you're a little quieter than her, huh? Or you're the quiet one to Barbara. And I mean, even now, like we're grown humans mm-hmm. and Barbara, what did you say, Barbara? You can tell them.
I said, I'm not the quiet one. It's just hard to get a word in sometimes around. but like the idea that one would have to be the quiet one and one would have to be the loud, or, you know, whatever.
Right. That you're never defined as individuals. You're always defined as one.
Yes.
Yeah.
One's the one. And then therefore the other one, like.
Right.
And I know Barbara very well. You know, there's some wildness in there, you know?
Who got into the most trouble? Like
Jenna, for sure.
Jenna.
Yeah.
I did.
You it's were just because like, she's loud.
Right.
Barbara was, there was, in high school, Barbara was definitely, like, from eighth grade to even to senior year, Barbara was by far wilder than I was.
Mm-hmm. I was just more subtle about it.
Right, she was more slick. You were more, or Jenna was more overt, just like, fuck it, look at me, I'll do this, I'll do that. Barbara was like, whoa, wait a minute.
Like, in places she knew she wouldn't get caught.
Right.
Exactly. Although we did get in trouble with the law publicly, which was an
a
cover of People magazine. It said, which was like, this shows you the time. It said, oops, they did it again.
Yeah.
Did you get two in my piece as well? Because they said, oops, they did it again.
I don't know. I know I got one with you when we ordered the margaritas together.
That was stupid. Yeah. That was it.
What did you get busted for? Ordering margaritas?
Yeah.
We walked into a restaurant. There were both of us together. So,
yeah.
I guess the point is we were naive. Mm-hmm. And our dad was like, don't worry. Y'all can be normal college kids. Like, he basically told us, and now that I'm a parent, I totally get it. It's like he wanted to subside our fear. Mm. And our fear was that we couldn't be normal, mm-hmm. that we couldn't. Like, we went to a big public high school. We had a really normal childhood. And I actually think he believed it. I think he thought, don't worry, like, y'all can go and do everything that, and you know, we weren't doing terrible things. Mm-hmm. We were 19 or 20.
Yeah.
We were in college.
Yeah.
Well,
so happened to have a father who was the president of the United States.
But not only
States.
That, but it even goes back further with your grandfather even being vice president, then president. I mean, was there ever that talk where it's like, look, girls, there is something here that we need to be careful of? Or was it just like, no, hey, you're normal humans. Go do your thing and we'll deal with whatever fallout comes.
It was not.
Wow.
Which was so great.
I mean, it's lucky there was no pressure on us to be some way that, I mean, who knows how you're supposed to act if your dad is the president, but there was no pressure for us to act in whatever way that was. But I do think, I mean, when we were growing up, our grandfather was so humble that I thought everyone's grandfather was president. I didn't know that that was like this special thing for him. I thought, like, when we went to his inauguration in first grade, I thought I was about to go to all my friends' grandfather's inauguration.
Yeah.
And I was really sad to realize that. I went back to school after his inauguration and I asked my friend what her grandfather's inauguration was. She told me he wasn't having one. And I was so sad. I went home and journaled about it in my journal. But it, like, really speaks to how they acted, and that our grandparents, or a grandfather in particular, didn't act like elusive in any way, or that his job was any more special than anyone else's job.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think there's something beautiful about how naive we were around that. But it also then, of course, meant that we did make public mistakes.
Yeah.
Yeah. But also, thank God, you know, because I'm so happy that our parents allowed us that space to fail.
Yeah.
Like, I think when I'm like kind of with teenagers on the show, or when we talk with psychologists, I think one of the reasons why the levels of anxiety and depression are so horribly high is that kids feel like if they make one mistake, their lives will be over.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I feel I have to give our kids grace. Like, you know, it's okay to fail. Mm-hmm. It's okay to make a mistake. And even though in the time it felt horrible and we were embarrassed, our parents never shamed us. Like, they weren't, thanks a lot. You know, now people are talking. They my dad actually apologized to me when I called and I was like crying and I was like, Dad, I got in trouble, you know, whatever. He was like, oh, like, I told you could be normal. I'm like, obviously you can't. Mm-hmm. I mean, the second time we did it, he was a little bit more like, dude, just don't go to a bar for one more year and then you're free.
Oliver Hudson.
You ready to tap these, Rockies?
Let's tap it out.
I've tapped a lot of things in my life. My favorite thing to tap is the Rockies.
Are the Rockies?
Light. Yeah. It's the sexiest beer in town. Coors Light.
But let's just say it, that there's literally only one beer that is literally made to chew.
Yeah, literally, because the mountain's on the bottle and the cans, they turn blue when your beer is cold. So it's literally, literally made to chill.
And we're coming into the summer months.
That's right.
I can't. I was actually talking about, I can't wait to get to Colorado for this summer. I want to go back and do our, bring a good six pack of Coors Light and do our hike again.
Oh, yeah.
I want to go do that again.
You know what I do is I like to float. I like to fly fish. Actually, the whole family does. And you can drag those silver bullets behind the boat. So they're getting cold as you're fishing. And then you pull over, boom, crack one, catch a nice trout. I mean, come on. It doesn't get better.
How is the best?
Now I'm upset that I'm not actually doing that there right now. It's the perfect companion for all things chill. It's cold filtered. It's cold lagered. It's cold packaged. It's just cold. So when you choose to chill, pair your plans with an ice cold Coors Light. Get Coors Light delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart by going to CoorsLight.com/Hudson. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Part of what I love, what you're saying is that even with these, I mean, seriously powerful political figures in your family from a very early age, somehow your father and your mother were able to make you feel like you could go have a real fun teenage existence.
Yeah. And what about your mom really and all of this? You know, because we talk about your dad, of course, but how your mom, her significance in your upbringing and letting you sort of be you.
Well, our mom is preternaturally calm. She was a librarian. She's very zen. Like,
very. Shockingly.
Mm. It's wild. I don't know anybody as zen and calm as she is. And she, so therefore it's like, she just didn't get riled up by anything. Like, we tried to really, like, because 2-on-1 can be super intense, you know, and she's an only child. So I think we tried to rile her, but she stayed very calm and not like such a gift, because her piece of advice always, like when we would come with like teenage shit, you know, can you say that on a podcast?
Yeah.
When we would come with, it was like things that hurt our feelings when we were 15 years old as a girl. She would be like, listen, I know that hurts, but that's not big enough to worry about. Mm-hmm. Like, save it for the things that are going to really hurt. And it's true, because we have things in our lives that are monumental that hurt us, that even in high school we did, you know, but the little kind of petty things, she would listen to us, but she would just reassure us that, like, they didn't deserve all of our attention. Mm. And that was really, really helpful. I mean, I don't know, Barbara.
Well, also our mom is shockingly calm, but she also really wanted us to figure out who we were. There was no prescriptive path for us. And I know some parents like pressure their kids to follow some path, but our mom was the opposite of that. She wanted us just to pursue what we were interested in. And I mean, we traveled with our parents around the world, around the country, around the world. I went to 5 continents with my parents, and they just wanted to expose us to as many different people and as many different ways of being, so that hopefully we would figure out how we wanted to be. And I think that's a huge gift that my mom in particular wanted us to explore and figure out what got us excited, even if it didn't, you know, if it wasn't exciting to her or to others. And that was really lucky.
And were you able to be super open with your parents, tell them everything, or, you know?
I mean, yes, we did not tell them every single thing, but we definitely could. I mean, don't you feel like, Barbara?
Yeah, personality-wise, I'm very private, so I did not tell my parents everything, but I could have. And now at this age, I tell my parents everything, because why not? But when I was younger, I was like, it would have been totally allowed and accepted in every way.
Are you guys still holding a secret now that your parents don't know that you did when you were kids, where, or something kind of bad? We're like, oh shit, they still don't know about this and we're 40.
Probably.
You know, it's one thing to like have a parent that people look at like, oh, I want to be just like you, or your movies made me feel happy, or, you know, the tap dancing parent is very different than like people who are actually in charge of our future. Mm-hmm. You know, like the pressure of that is, it's so interesting that they really protected you, it feels like, from the how unbelievably powerful their positions, both grandpa and dad. You know, because, you know, your dad was a, you know, as most presidents are, but polarizing and in a very intense time, like being in college. Well, let's go to your grandpa first. Like, when did you guys first have that experience of like, oh, someone's like upset with my parent, or someone's like pushing back and I don't really understand what's going on, you know?
When, for with, I'll tell our grandfather and Barbara, you can probably talk more to dad.
Yeah.
And I was at a grocery store and there was a, like a Newsweek, I think, or a Time magazine. I'm pretty sure it was Newsweek though, that had him on the cover. And it said the wimp factor. They called him a wimp, which was like such a 90s or late 80s word. Mm-hmm. You know, like we used wimp on the playground.
I still call Ollie a wimp all the time.
I'm a proud wimp.
Remember, like, that was such a word of our childhood. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, wimpy.
Wimpy.
Yeah.
So disconcerting to see somebody who I loved so much, who also like the way that he led was gentle.
Yeah.
Was much more gentle. I mean, he was a very different leader than we've seen in the last couple, you know, or the last decade. He led with love. He listened. He was raised to be so humble that, like, actually he would get in trouble as a little boy if he bragged about, like, his baseball team or something. So we didn't know any of the stuff that he had done. You know, he never talked about himself. He always asked questions. He always gave credit to everybody that helped him. Like, he didn't need to be like the macho spotlight, I'm the king type of guy. And so, like, to us, that felt beautiful and just who he was, you know? And so I remember, like, I really confused, and it was like right around when I learned how to read.
And
so
you were second grade.
Like first or second. But I could read it and I could see it. And I asked my mom and, you know, it felt like such a different way than I would have described him. But I mean, that's how he was thought of as a leader. It's like not strong enough, not tough enough, not bragging about himself enough.
And did you feel a sense of, like, I mean, especially being the aggressive lover in the family, were you like, did you feel like this desire to protect grandpa?
I mean, I just felt, I did. Like, I was sort of wanted to, like, move all the magazines and put something else on top. You know, like, it just so didn't match the words, so didn't match what we thought of him. Mm-hmm. Like, he was our hero. We admired him so much. So that was like sort of the first and kind of only time when we were little.
Do you remember how your parents, or did you talk to your mom or dad about that feeling? Do you remember that?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely did. I don't remember what I think they sort of just let us talk it out, because I think they also knew, like, that's, you know, freedom of speech. Like, that's what comes with the territory. And so it's like, what could they say? You know, like, it is what it is. Mm-hmm. But I think they let me talk about, like, what that feeling felt like and how, like, hurtful it was to me as a little kid to see that.
Mm-hmm. Even though... It's part of the job. Like, your grandfather and your father probably don't get stung by a lot, you know?
No, they don't.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah,
it didn't hurt his feelings, you know? I mean, I think he, you know, was like, wow, they believe in the freedom of journalists to check the government. I mean, that's the point of free speech.
Yeah.
At the time, was your dad governor?
No.
When was your dad governor? Later.
He became governor when we were in the middle of seventh grade.
Oh, another gosh. Oh, my gosh. You guys. Oh, my gosh. You were campaigning with your parents during these times, too, probably.
We almost never. I mean, we chose to campaign with our dad when he ran the second time for president when we were 22. But besides that, our parents were not into having us. they didn't want us to do anything that made us feel uncomfortable or put us in the spotlight in any way, which is so lucky. Like, we didn't have to do any of the sort of cheesy campaign ads that you see with the family.
That's
we
so
just
great.
Were involved in whatever we were doing when we were, I mean, 13 isn't a great time for a transition, but we were just doing our thing, and there was, and they were very respectful of that.
But also, for some reason, the difference between, I mean, not for some reason, but the difference between, and I don't know if it's still this way, but then the difference between governor and president was drastic. My dad was governor downtown to Austin High School. We had like a totally, totally normal high school experience. And nobody cared, you know?
I think Austin was so laid back at the time that it was, we got no attention. No one cared.
That's great.
What our dad did was the most normal, like, movie high school experience.
But that changed in college, I would assume, when dad's president of the United States. And then how do you deal with that shit? I mean, God.
Wait, I want to go back to your first time, Barbara, where you discovered, like, oh, my God, people are talking shit about my family. You know, it's a terrible feeling because we've experienced it differently, but very different, I think, politically.
I think so. I mean, I was out of it as a kid. It's like the credit to our grandparents. When we were with them, they were 100% there. They were so present with us that I had no idea the role that my grandfather was in. But when I went to college, it was different. I chose to go to a school where I didn't know anyone. I went to Yale, which is like a highly political campus. I was probably the only person that voted for my dad on the entire campus. And it was during the recount, the 2000 recount was my freshman year. And there were like protests going on for the recount. And our dad knew what he was getting into, and you referenced this before. He had such a thick skin. Like, he knows that part of the job is people criticizing you. That's what comes with the territory, and you rise above that. And so in many ways, I was surprised by my experience, but I had the best roommates. I mean, luckily I made friends who protected me, and I found out later, they would like walk with me to a party and we would walk around the protest. They would take me in a different direction. So I didn't even know they were going on, just because it felt so personal to me. Even though no one there was protesting who they thought was my dad, they were protesting this guy that they disagreed with. But for me, it took a really long time to disengage from how this guy that I love so much, that has shown up in every way in our life and been there for me and all the sad things and all the happy things. It was so hard for me to disengage from them attacking this person that I loved so deeply and who I saw so differently. And part of that, I'm sure, is a similar experience to y'all, in that in public life, people will only know these certain aspects of your parents. And the beauty is you get to know all these different, you know, I know all these different facets of my dad that no one will ever know unless they're related to him. And that's kind of the beauty of it, but it's also the hard part of it, in that you want to tell other people that their interpretation is different. But I mean, I didn't watch the news ever.
So. Yeah, it's also people, you know, they just latch on to any kind of salacious negative story, as we know, you know. So like people, the passion and the
anger. Did it ever feel scary for you being on campus during that time where it's like, oh, it's the Bush kid?
Really, I mean, I think what was like what I really realized is that then I made friends with everyone. I mean, I really like, I joke when I say I'm the only person that voted for my dad on campus, but I probably am the only person that voted for my dad on campus. And I was friends with everyone. And I think then people realize like, wait, I'm actually talking bad about this person's dad. I'm not going to do that around them because, you know, I would never talk bad about someone else's dad.
Yeah.
And so it, but at the beginning, that was my freshman year. And I was in shock. Like, I never thought of myself as the president's daughter because I'd never been the president's daughter. And all of a sudden, identity wise, that's how other people see me. So it was sort of a complicating experience to figure out when you're already trying to figure out what your identity is when you're 18. Anyway.
And Jenna, where were you?
I went to Texas. So I stayed in Austin, where we went to middle school and high school. And I sort of chose the safer route because I knew a lot of people. Mm-hmm. I kind of like had an instant day one group of people that loved me, you know?
Mm-hmm. Barbara's like, I'm just going to jump right into the fire.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. Wow. I would think growing up in such a, like, I mean, the lineage, the political lineage of your family, what is it like? Where do you guys sit politically?
Yeah. It's so funny because I feel like when people are like, you know, when there's like a family of doctors, or I guess like a family of actors, you know, people just assume like two things. One, that we're going to like, it used to for sure. I mean, I think we've sort of defined ourselves a little bit by this point, but the first question was like, are y'all going into politics?
Yeah. Mm-hmm,
like, I'm sure people ask if your kids are going into, like, I'm sure I've asked that question to somebody. Now I regret it.
Right.
Everybody just assumes that that will follow like the family business, mm-hmm. one. And then two, it's like even recently people will say things to me like they think that they know how we vote or how we think. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, so interesting to me that they think because our parents, and not even both of our parents, like mm-hmm. you said, our mom has had differing views from our dad and have been vocal. Our grandmother in the 90s was pro-choice. Mm-hmm. And in fact, when like, you know, her husband was the Republican president. And she came out and said it while mm-hmm. he was president.
Wow.
And so you know, my mom came from, her parents were like Yellow Dawn Democrats down in Texas. So the point is, like, we come from a family where everybody's allowed to believe whatever they want to mm-hmm. believe. And in fact, our parents, I like just interviewed my dad for something. And I was like, yeah, y'all probably think our dad was like, you need to vote this way and believe this way and you can't do this. And I was like, but he wanted us to be, you know, curious and independent. And I was like, and now that I'm a parent, I know like what a pain in the ass that is. He was like, yeah, y'all were a pain in the ass. You know, like, Governor, Barbara and I would like read about the death penalty and sit him down and be like, Dad, this is ridiculous. Like, and like he would come home from debating something to like two little 13. Right.
Well, I was gonna ask you that. Like when he was president and you were in college, now you're sort of becoming, you know, these women and vocal and do you ever, yeah. you ever like, Dad, what the fuck are you doing? Like, what is this law? What is this policy? Like, I mean, would you ever talk to him about that and be like, I don't get this. I don't like it. I don't know what the hell you're doing right now.
Yes.
That's so great.
That's amazing.
I also love that your dad's just surrounded by girls. Like, that's just, it's like, you know, outspoken girls.
And by the way, like, he listens. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. It's not, I mean, because I think what we want, I mean, I want this for my kids too, is to feel like they can be mm-hmm. themselves. And have their own opinions and their own beliefs. And like, and I feel like that's how your parents are too. It's like, you don't have to just take on our ideology.
Mm-hmm. You know, there's a really sweet picture of your grandpa, my mom, dancing.
Oh yeah.
My mom has that somewhere. I think my mom has it framed in the house somewhere.
Yes. I think this is when didn't she spill her drink on his lap?
She spilled her drink and then they danced.
Yeah.
Like she said he was just the greatest
man. At the White House or where was it?
No.
Do you know?
It was at some sort of a dinner. Yeah. She's this picture of them dancing.
Maybe it was an old, like in the 90s.
But they had the best time.
Not cute.
You know what's so funny? I was just thinking because as a parent, like, you know, you want to do anything to please your kids. You know, like if they have a problem, you want to try to fix it in some way.
Yeah.
Even when they probably are older. And so if you have sort of if your dad's the president of the free world and you have real feelings about something, it's almost hard as a parent to be like, well, sorry, like this is the way I want to do it, even though I know you girls are so passionate about this, you know, because you have the power to affect policy at that point.
Yeah.
Because you're playing to your dad's love and heartstrings in a sense.
Yeah. Although we were like, and you know. Again, like we were so, I mean, college is just such a selfish time because you're like innately for everybody. You're trying to figure out what you want to study, who you want to be, what friends you want around you, like whatever. And so it was, you know.
And you know everything and you don't want to talk to your parents about it because they don't know anything.
Yes. Like we just sort of, I mean, there were definitely times I think where we both would call and be like, Dad, you know, think about way, but not like in our day to day. Do you know what I mean? We weren't like working advisors to the president.
No, of course not. I mean, the thing is, right when he got into office, fucking 9/11 happens too, which is just.
That's what I was going to say is 9/11 happened so early in his presidency that I think when we were around him, we just wanted to be funny and make him laugh and entertain him and try to provide some levity so that he wasn't thinking, you know, we didn't know what he was on his mind when we were with him, and he obviously never would bring it up because he didn't want to put any weight on us in that way. But I think we tried harder to like entertain him whenever we were around him rather than bring up anything difficult.
I wonder too, I mean, think about it. It's like, it keeps kind of like, you know, your uncle, like everybody in your family is like very kind of politically focused. I mean, most. Do you ever have moments where you're just like, angry at them for any kind of like ideas or ideology or, you know?
I mean, like all families and particularly over, you know, in the last decade, you know, there's some families that can't sit across from each other and because politics have become so divisive and polarizing. And so, you know, in the time when everybody was having those conversations, which I guess is still now, but particularly in that sort of era, which I know you're, you know what I'm referring to, like we were like all families and we had conversations where everybody would have different points of views.
Yeah.
But mostly we all sort of, you know, and I think, but I think that's sort of what, and somebody said this to me once, they were like, so your parents and your grandparents put humanity above political party? And I was like flabbergasted. Mm-hmm. Like I was like, yes, yes. Like
how it's supposed to be.
I don't know if that makes sense, but like they haven't always voted for the Republican candidate because they, again, like they're open and they've said that, you know, that's public knowledge, but they're open and they, it's like a case by case, you know? Yep. And I think there's like nuance and our family's conversation, which is like what's missing so much.
Oh God, it's gone. It's so going away rapidly. If it's not, if not already gone, now there is. There is no. It's not about ideology. It's not about what you believe in. What's in your heart? It's just about power and sort of staying in power and staying in power at all costs. And it's just so crazy. What does this say about public service? What kid wants to be president now? What kid wants to be like, I want to be president of the United States? It's like, no fucking way. Look at this. Like, look at this mess. It's Who wants so to get into politics?
I know. People always, I mean, obviously our whole life, people have always said to us, as they probably have to any member of our family, are you going to go into politics? And we used to be so aggressively, we would respond so aggressively, like on the count of three, we'd say no, like as loud as we could, basically. And now I would still say no, but it breaks my heart because I actually, you know, it's really sad if people don't want to go into political office or don't want to go into service. You know, that's such a disheartening time, but it's so impossible to be in that world right now.
God. Yeah. There's no respect. There's no sense of, you know, camaraderie or, you know, solution oriented. People stopped listening for some reason. Yeah. They're all playing up to be like the loud person in the room. And I don't know.
Real quick, getting back to you guys though for a second, because you were so inseparable, high school, growing up, everything, and then boom, now you're off to different colleges. I mean, was that break tough for you guys? Was it difficult?
Well, when we were little, and this is like another benefit to our parents, they sent us to different camps, different summer camps.
Oh, wow.
Which was so smart since we were seven. So we had to navigate by ourselves and, you know, be on our own and make friends by ourselves, which was really smart. I feel like it wasn't hard to separate for college. It was almost like we got double the college experience. Like we got, like I'd go stay with Jenna all the time. She would come visit me all the time. And I was friends with her friends and she was friends with my friends at Yale and still
Now.
So it was kind of, it was only additive when we separated. Like we got to then live through each other also.
Mm. Did you ever get to spend any time in the White House?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. So you would like sleep there? Did you have rooms?
Yeah. We
had rooms. And our mom was really smart. She put 2 queen beds in each of our rooms so that we would come and bring a ton of friends.
Right.
Did you ever bring your boyfriends there?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so did you make love in the White House to your boyfriend?
Oh, my God, Oliver. Yes. I bet.
Come on.
You use the term make love.
Well, I'm trying to be sensitive here, you know?
I mean, somewhat respectful.
Right. We're talking about the White House. You got to make love,
listen,
you know?
Listen.
No.
I'm like, remember if I'm sure we did. Probably. No comment, but that's probably.
Oh my God.
No comment.
By the way, that's so funny. I could you imagine that, like that, like just going to your friend's house, like in college, being like, hey, why don't you come? Like, yeah, we're going to like visit our parents. And you just go and hang out at the White House.
By the way, that's how we would have talked about it too. Like,
yeah.
Oh, we're going home to see our mom and dad. I mean, that's how that really is how we thought of it. But it was a fun place for some parties.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah. I mean, I would also think, is it haunted?
Yeah.
It is, isn't it?
It is?
Wow. Definitely.
Wait a minute. Hold on. What do you mean it's haunted? How do you know?
We heard a ghost.
No, but you didn't believe me the first time. The first time my phone rang, because this was like, again, we were
Nokia phone. We're 20
and we had a Nokia phone that rang, you know, we had like boyfriends or friends that would call at like 3 a.m, you know, now that's like when my alarm clock goes off. But anyway, we like somebody called in the middle of the night and we were staying with our parents for the summer. I was working at a charter school. What were you doing, Sissy? Something.
No idea. Yeah. But we were both there.
Yeah, we were both there. The phone rang. I answered it. Like, it was like, I'm asleep. Like, I'll call you tomorrow. Hung up. And I was still awake. And I heard opera. And I'm not, and not like somebody could be listening. It's the middle of the night. We both had fireplaces in our room that we never used, but they were there. And all of a sudden, like I felt like it wasn't just like hearing, I felt like a gush of wind and like somebody singing opera loud, like wow, as if they were fucking fireplace. Sorry for the bad words. So I ran in and I jumped, and Barbara's room was right next to mine. I ran in, I like jumped in her bed. I was like so scared. And she was like, no, it's not that. And then Barbara, two nights later,
we were sleeping in the same room. I was in Jenna's room. We had both fallen asleep. And all of a sudden we hear like 1920s piano music.
Yes.
Coming from the fireplace, but as if someone was there playing the piano.
Not like I wonder if Chelsea had the same thing. I have to ask Chelsea. She had any of those experiences?
I don't know. She was there more than we were, so she might have. But the next morning we talk ourselves out of it. There is a piano outside, yeah, or there was outside our room. So we're like, possibly it's like the cat.
Playing twenties, like
some opera.
Like 20s Mary time.
That would be even weirder. You walk out, the cat's like, oh. You're like, wait a minute. Something's really weird.
And then I went outside first, who we loved, named Buddy, who just retired, was there. And I was like, Buddy, you're not
going to. The piano was closed.
Yeah, the piano was closed. I mean, we just said that to ourselves for sleeping purposes.
Okay, go back to sleep.
And I was like, Buddy, gosh, like, you won't believe what we heard. And he was like, oh, Jenna, like, that's like, you wouldn't even fathom the amount of things we've seen around here.
Wow.
It's like, that's like, Berg. But those were our 2 experiences.
Of course. But of course, I mean, think about, yeah, how many different, yes, people have been in the, yes, White House, you know, throughout the years.
And how like fraught each of the times.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
But they were friendly. The ghosts.
Yes, love music, obviously.
Was that just one time or did it happen more?
It happened twice. Just twice. But there were other things that other people, like, remember Reagan had that story of like a footprints, and then she found out that a baby had died.
Yeah, and that baby had died in the White House.
Yeah.
And saw baby footprints in her room.
Yeah.
There's probably so much secretive stuff that goes down in that place.
I mean, baby footprints is, that's even weirder because my baby's walking.
They're more, and also they're, well, like a 1 year old baby.
It's like baby footprints is like really creepy. And like a walking baby, it's just nuts.
Oh my God.
You guys have done a lot of writing. It's kind of manifested its way into these children's books. And so I want to make sure we touch on this a little bit. So when did you guys decide? Well, first of all, your first book was really really about you guys together, wasn't it?
Bestseller, New York Times.
How was that experience for you?
It was, well, we decided to do it on the day after the 2016 election. And we had a meeting booked, and we went with, like, to talk about actually the children's book. That's where we were going to start, which is easier because they don't take so long to write.
Mm-hmm. And
then we both felt like, so much of
I had spent the night before with Jenna to watch the election results come in New York. We live 4 blocks from each other. And I went over there and the night got later and later. So I just spent the night with her in her bed. And my husband, her husband was out of town. And so when we woke up the next morning, we were going to this meeting about a children's book. And we were both so surprised by the election results, like so many people were when they woke up the day after the election in 2016. And we had realized that we'd spent so many election nights together, some on elections that were more personal, you know, like so much, you know, involving our family, all of which were important for the country. And we ended up deciding on the subway to our book meeting to write, instead of a children's book, to write a book of short essays that were more sort of a love letter to each other, to having a sister and a partner in our life, and also a love letter to our family members, sort of around the bigger message of what we've been talking about, that like humanity is what matters and not, you know, devotion to your political party and trying to show these other sides of people that had chosen service and normalize that experience. I mean, that's what it ended up being. I don't think we knew it was going to be that in the moment.
Well, I think like, and at first we were like, we want a love letter to sisterhood, because no matter like what political party you were in, the way women were talked about in the 2016 election was not okay with us. And I, at that time, I had 2 little girls, like a brand new baby girl who's now 6, but like, you know, a tiny infant. And I just was like, this is not the direction we need for our girls. And so we decided really like around.
Oh, that's great. So I was inspired by that. I love that.
Okay. So then that was a bestseller. And then you finally got to now do your children's book, which I got to read to my daughter yesterday, which I was really happy about. Aww. Super cute, super power sisterhood. And so
it's all around like, so the first book was really about blood sisters, like Barbara and I are, but this is all around friends. Like I think I know Kate from friends, that mutual friends that we have, and that you have like a group of women that make you feel powerful and brave. And Barbara and I have that same thing, not only in each other, but and our colleagues. Like, I don't know what I would do without Savannah and Hoda. They like are my lifeline. They pick up my kids from the bus when I'm out of town. Like, it just is about how we want our girls to support each other and to love each other, and how each of us have talents that are, you know, human, but together with our group of friends, can become like super powerful.
Yeah. And I think it's such a important message, because it's okay to remind ourselves that as women, we are predisposed based on historically how women had to, you know, protect themselves, that we are predisposed to compete with each other, that we need to actually change the way that old part of our brain you know, can react to other women, like that we actually are much stronger when we're supporting and connected to each other than the old ways we've been taught through sort of, you know, the patriarchy and all of that.
What patriarchy?
Happier, you know.
Patriarchy.
Much happier to be surrounded by a group of funny.
Oh, my God. Awesome. It's just. Oh.
Are you blaming the patriarchy for your cattiness?
No.
Yes.
No. Please. Well, I'm surrounded by men. I wish I had some more women in my life.
It's so funny, though, because
I have 3 brothers.
But also, like what we hope with this book, and I see this with my daughters. My daughters and Samantha Guthrie's daughter are best friends. And like the way they act to each other is how I want Mila to have friends for the rest of her life. Because Mila, you want, and Brene Brown actually like writes about this, but you want people in your life that make you feel like anything that you have that's innately yours is powerful and awesome. So like, as opposed to like, so for example, I said to Mila, I said, how was Belle in the play? And she goes, oh, mom, she was spectacular. Mm-hmm. And like, that's who I want to be friends with. I don't want like, Brene Brown calls them like the candle blower outers. Like the person that would be like, oh, you like math? Ugh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You're into,
you like dance? Ew, dance is for babies. Like my kids, they're allowed to do whatever they want. But if the little candle blower outer comes over there and acts like that in front of them, I don't know how I'm going to respond.
Yeah, you're going to be like, bye.
Oh, I know. Like,
you're not hanging out with this.
Because it's time for you to go home.
Right.
Like, I always had somebody that, I mean, there were mean girls. And there's that period of like seventh grade and sixth grade that's just awful for anybody, you know? But like, I innately had it in Barbara, you know? So I look for it now in whoever I'm going to surround myself with. Barbara, what were you going to say?
I agree with that. I also think like, I mean, it's a good reminder that you have to walk the walk. I mean, you know, thinking of myself, that I have to walk the walk too. And in that, like when you're little, you're always watching what your parents do. And if your mom walks the walk, I mean, Kate, I think from what I know about you, you do this. If your mom walks the walk in that way, then that's what you think is the norm.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, I mean, that goes back to what we were saying about our grandfather. He was so humble that we thought everyone acted like that. Like it's only when you get older that you realize that's not the case. But it's, I mean, it's hard. It's so easy to say when you're not in an emotional moment, but our lives are only additive because of each other. Like my success is not diminished because of your success. Rationally, we know that. And then you have to hold yourself accountable to being the person you want to be. Mm-hmm.
I just own my disdain and anger for people who make more money than me and are more successful.
Oh, shut up.
You just own it. It's like, okay, yeah, you made $2 million for that piece of shit. Like, oh, God, all right, whatever. You know, I own it. Cool.
You're not in the superpower sisterhood.
you gotta get Ollie in here.
Ollie, we'll convert you.
Yeah. To be you join the sisterhood every Halloween.
I do, pretty much. You guys ever fight doing the book? Being like, no, I don't want to say that, or this picture sucks. Never.
Wow.
Never.
Do you guys fight?
Yeah, we used to fight. We haven't fought in a long time. But
well, it was all about, I mean, it was primarily about clothes, really.
Yeah. Mm. The sharing.
Like sharing. We had a hard time learning how to share it.
Oh, okay.
And how to share better.
I would give anything to have a sister that I would fight over sharing clothes with. Sometimes when I think about like whenever we interview sisters or my friends who have sisters, it's like looking at, I feel like it's like an alien relationship to me. Do you know what I mean? My mom is the closest thing I have to that feeling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's sort of different because we have cousins that were boys, acted like brothers. So, like, I feel like a sister is harder to replicate than a brother. No offense.
It's true.
It's fine. No.
In his older age, he's bringing more of femininity.
I'm extremely feminine.
Who's, you know, I feel
I've
like
always
sometimes
been super
I feel like
feminine.
He's like my sister.
That's very feminine, very emotional.
He is. He cries with me.
I'm very empathetic. I've major anxiety, you know.
Yeah. That's not, I mean
that doesn't have to be part of
that's not like gender specific.
Well,
let's do the speed round.
Okay, cool.
All right, one word to describe each other.
Funny. Brilliant. Okay, wait, I'm describing Barbara, obviously.
I'm describing you.
Yeah, thank
brilliant
you.
Brilliant and funny. Okay. Who was the boundary pusher?
Me. Probably her.
I'm going to assume that, Jenny, you're bossier as well. Who's bossier?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But for like some holiday. I'm not, or I guess my kids gave it to me. I'm like looking around to find out. I'm not the boss. I'm not bossy. I'm the boss.
Okay. Or, who was, now we actually interviewed another, this man who's wonderful, who's researched siblings and sibling dynamics, who said there's always a favorite and it does change. That usually with a family, there is a favorite child and then it can move around. Is there a favorite child with you two?
No, they're me.
Barbara is now, but when we were, Barbara was my mom's favorite and I was my dad's. And now it's just pure Barbara.
Is it all Barbara all the time?
All Barbara. Under.
Oh my God. I see it now more with our grandchildren. I can tell which grandchild is sort of in the favorite spot.
Right.
Yeah.
You know,
do your parents admit it? Are they just like, yeah, no, Barb's the favorite?
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
But probably behind my back. Oh, and they admitted it to you?
No, definitely not.
Oh, I
when Barbara Jenna. Was
at, oh, wonderful. Behind my back?
Yeah. Like, great. Thanks, guys. They actually said it.
First concert.
Paul Simon.
Yeah, Paul Simon Graceland tour.
Ooh,
that's
by the
a
way,
good one.
Love.
R.O.P. That's in first spring.
That's the first, cool.
That album was so good.
It's, Pearl Jam. It's the best.
The first one we went to by ourselves was Pearl Jam, and I was looked up, and Barbara, and we were like, yeah, we were probably too young to be by ourselves, and looked up, and Barbara was like a tiny, she still is, but was like a little tiny human, was like crowd surfing. And
so what song? Do you remember, was it like Black? Like what song was it?
So funny.
Yeah, it probably was Black. We were 13. It was the early 90s.
Pearl Jam was the best. Who's more of a prankster?
Probably
Jenna. Jenna, April Fool's Day is Jenna's best holiday.
Mm. Oh, I love really?
She loves
I forgot about it this year. I didn't go all in.
I know.
Usually, like, yeah, we do some really wonderful, wonderful.
Okay, who is the better student?
Barbara B.
Who's more artistic? Oh, we didn't even get into your dad's painting.
Oh, I know. Oh, yeah.
No, he's good. I think me.
It depends. She's more artistic in them. I'm more of a writer. She's more of a painter. Yeah.
Got it.
I know.
What about first celebrity crush?
Oh my gosh, Jonathan Brandis from the movie Ladybugs.
Oh my God.
What? I don't even know.
Passed away, RIP. It's horrible.
Who?
Do you remember Jonathan Brandis?
Did he pass away? So my ex-girlfriend, I dated for 3 years. Her name was Vanessa Shaw, and she was the star of Ladybug.
Of Ladybug?
Yeah.
It was so good.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was like a soccer movie.
I don't remember much about it. Was it a soccer movie?
Yeah,
it was
soccer.
I had so many first crushes. I can't even pick one. It was like...
I know.
Tell us three. Who were your first top three?
My top three was Corey Haim.
Okay. Yeah.
Joey McIntyre.
Mm-hmm. Joey McIntyre.
New Kids.
New Kids on the Block.
I like Nicole Eggert. That she was like it for me. Charles in Charge.
Ugh.
You can tell we're all at the same time.
Right.
Okay. Who is more organized?
Sissy.
Who's more of a minimalist?
Me.
I just have three children.
Yeah.
Right.
Who's more of an asshole?
Oh, Oliver. Huh? That's actually a really interesting.
Yeah. Question. Who's more of an asshole?
I got your question. Barbara's like, Barbara can be an asshole, but I think Barbara's more of an asshole.
That is not true.
Yes, you are
definitely more of an asshole.
Remember when you texted me on the picture? You're more of an asshole. You're just a quiet asshole.
Oh, that's so funny.
Don't remember what I texted you. Don't.
Or what?
But what did I text you? Oh, well, tell me after.
And you texted me. You're kind of like deeply inside a little bit of an asshole.
I've got like some scratchiness.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. You need to be scratched.
It's so interesting. Who's more of an asshole with us?
You.
No way.
I'm not an asshole at all.
But you say the most asshole things.
Yeah, but is a joke. Not,
you asked us. Like, I am so not an asshole, but you actually.
You're more of an asshole than I am, 100%.
But I'm not.
Yeah, you
like,
are.
Like, what? Give me one thing that I've ever said.
We just got to pull everyone around us.
And no, I actually think, this is what I think is
interesting. I'm not saying you're an asshole. I'm saying you're more of an asshole than I am.
I think because you're funny.
I can get away with
things. You get away with things,
there's
therefore,
no doubt.
But deep down, you really are
no,
the bigger asshole.
No way.
Yes.
No way.
Yeah, I think so.
I'm too nice to be an asshole.
No, you think you're so nice, but really deep down, you think about
I care too much about people's feelings.
Kind of things.
No.
Like, I'm gonna
text now.
You're texting Family Affair?
Yeah, no.
We have our Family Affair group text. Text them. Ask who our family thinks is more of an asshole.
No way.
I think it's you.
It would start too much of a battle.
The funniest part is the word asshole.
Right.
You know what I mean? That's part of it.
Exactly. Well, you're definitely more of a dickhead.
I'll take that.
She just protective, you know?
Yeah.
Protective. Right, that's a good one.
Okay.
Finish it up.
Was that the last question?
No. It's like the first time we've ever asked.
Okay,
that.
One bucket list item. One thing you haven't done that you really want to do.
Shit. Well, I mean, one thing I want to do again, because I haven't been doing it, is travel. That's not very exciting, but I feel like my life has been limited due to
Barbara,
COVID.
You just went on the Orient Express from Paris. So
let me in the on Friday.
She has, and she now she's got the bug again.
Yeah. I've got a bug big time.
Ugh, I'm with you. I'm
that
with
sounds
you on that
amazing.
One.
I would love to.
I mean, that's, and meanwhile, it's like I've gone to Fort Worth, Texas.
Yeah.
Job every day and three children. So when Barbara's like, I just would love to like get back out there in the world. I'm like, receive a postcard from Venice.
You like, you took the kids to Garrison, New York.
She's the asshole for sure.
It's because I'm the asshole.
You gotta wake up every day at 3 a.m.
I would love to travel a little. I'm like, eat it, Barbara.
Okay, so what is your bucket list?
Well, I'd like to learn how to sing. J-Lo said that her book, well, J-Lo said this via Hoda, so I'm not, you know, we didn't search, but J-Lo said that her vocal coach can teach anybody how to sing. And as Barbara alluded to, I wanted to be a Broadway star when I was a small child. So I'd like to go to J-Lo's coach and learn, like, not how to be J-Lo, but like how to carry a tune, you know, I'm not sure what it's for.
It's very doable.
Right.
Yeah, you can achieve this.
Yeah.
Also, see, Kate is a really good singer.
Oh, I know she is. I've seen the films that she's been in.
I love to sing. Okay, I'm going to... Oh, wait, two more things. Tequila or vodka?
Tequila if I'm going out at night because it's an upper, and vodka if I'd like to go to sleep and wake up at 3 a.m.
Okay. But like desert island, what are you doing? What are you bringing?
Tequila.
Well, I guess I'm going to need the energy on it. Oh. So tequila and lemon. I drink lemon in my drinks.
Barb?
It's delicious, refreshing. I'd say vodka, but I've limit my drinking.
I'll be pictured behind the bars, but she slowed the drinking down.
Damn.
The almost a halt.
Okay. One other thing. Beach or mountains?
Beach.
Like a mountain on the beach?
That's a good one.
Oh.
Like big surf.
Like why either or?
Or like Barcelona?
Barcelona. Barcelona is
there's mountains. It's mountainous. Oh. Barcelona looks kind of like L.A.
Kind of, right? It's like some hill you can climb.
Right.
Yeah.
You know?
Okay, Ollie, you want to ask the last one?
Two-part question. So if there is one thing that you could alleviate from your sister to make her life easier, what would that be? And then the flip of that is if there was something that you could take from her that you could make that you could take for yourself, something that you admire that you wish that you had, what would that be?
It's a very, very deep question. It needs a minute.
Well, I wish I could give my sister more hours in the day. My sister does a lot.
Mm-hmm.
She has three kids. She wakes up at the crack of dawn and is on TV.
Mm-hmm.
So not alleviate, but I wish I could give you more time.
I would love more time. Thank you, Sissy.
You're welcome.
What I would alleviate, because sometimes you have a hard time sleeping. Oops, my power is low. Can you hear, see me?
Yeah.
What I would take away... What I would take away from her is the ability not to sleep well, because sometimes she doesn't sleep well and that messes with her.
I would love that. I love sleep. It's one of life's great joys.
And then what would you take? Like, if there's something that you wish you had for yourself that your sister possesses?
Oh, I know. It doesn't really come into play now in my midlife, but I wish that I could have taken her SAT score and also her ability to do math as a child, because she missed one problem or two problems on her math SAT.
Wow.
That,
oh my God.
So if I could have taken that little part of her brain.
I'm good at a standardized test.
Yeah.
I mean, I've taken one in years, but I was good at them.
I no longer need that, but that would have come in handy before.
I will take my sister's ability, new upcoming ability to sing.
Great. This is her hobby.
That is such bullshit. Come up with something I already had. I'm fine.
You're about to have it.
Well, and it's not actually in the works, but okay.
Barbara, that was a very asshole-y answer.
See, I told
the other thing that I would take is your energy. I think you have good energy.
I do. No, thank you. Okay.
This is great.
Settled.
Perfect. You guys.
Thank you.
So happy to talk and chat. I'm glad you guys came on.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah.
Super fun.
And I hope to see you soon. All right, guys.
All right, guys. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
See you later.
Sibling Revelry is executive produced by Kate Hudson and Oliver Hudson.
Producer is Allison Bresnik.
Editor is Josh Windisch.
Music by Mark Hudson, a.k.a. Uncle Mark.
If you want to show us some love, rate the show and leave us a review. This show is powered by Simplecast.
This is Amy Brown from Four Things with Amy Brown. Today, healthier is happening at CVS Health in more ways than you've ever seen. It's wellness destinations for seniors, including select locations with Oak Street Health and CVS Pharmacy. It's doctors, nurses, pharmacists, and everyone in between offering quality care and support virtually, in person, and on the phone. It's in-home evaluations through Signify Health and meeting mental health needs through Aetna. And those are just a few of the ways that healthier is happening. To see more, visit cvshealth.com/healthierhappenstogether. CVS Pharmacy, Oak Street Health, CVS Specialty, Signify Health, and Aetna are part of CVS Health. Eligibility and services vary by location and individual.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles ready for next day installation and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.